I'd like to welcome you to RDA Resource Description and Access and Overview. My name is Amy Becker, and I'm from the Peter White Public Library. Today we're going to look at some history of RDA. We're going to introduce the conceptual model of FERBR, which is called Functional Requirements for Bibliographic Records, and how that plays with RDA. We're going to understand the relationship between those two. We'll preview some of the new rules and what they will mean for cataloging different types of materials. And we're going to try and understand some of the advantages and disadvantages of RDA now and in the future. First, a brief history of RDA. RDA started basically as AACR3, and it was intended to be AACR3. We were just going to revise the current rules that we have and make revisions to those, and those started in 2004. But the name and the scope changed in 2005 to include FERBR and FRAD models, and this was done basically because we needed more of an inclusive framework with our rules. RDA is designed for the digital environment and beyond. It is looked at and seen as an international standard rather than just an American standard. It's already published, and it was released in the toolkit in 2010 in June. So it's already an established set of rules. And we wanted to make it an international standard so that we can share records more easily and work with the digital environment, because everything tends to be going in that direction. So what we can do is we can look at the rules in FERBR and FRAD and make modifications that go against those two models. The testing period of RDA was last October through December of 2010. They used OCLC and the three main libraries, the Library of Congress, the National Library of Medicine, and the National Library of Agriculture got together and were doing testing. There were also some other libraries in the U.S. that were doing testing, different universities, public libraries, school libraries. They had a whole gamut of people doing the testing, and it is now over. The assessment of that testing is actually going on right now. They have stopped the testing, and they're looking at assessing that to make a decision on whether or not to adopt RDA in 2011, which should be this June. Now, what the Joint Steering Committee did as far as revising RDA can be seen in a metaphor. And I'm going to use the metaphor of a brick building. AACR2 is kind of like a brick building. It had different rooms in different areas. It was all put together very nicely and worked for us for a very long time. What the Joint Steering Committee did was take all the rules that we liked in AACR2 and kind of deconstructed them, took them down to their bare bones, took the cement out, took the framework out, and just had this bunch of set of rules, and they wanted to rebuild it and put it back together so it would be something a lot more grand. And that way, we can deal with things that are emerging, technologies that are emerging, as well as deal with older things that we still need to catalog in archives and museums. So hopefully that'll give you a little bit of an idea of what's happened. We still kept a lot of the bricks, and a lot of the rules have stayed the same. They're just in a different framework in RDA. Some of the goals of RDA, we need to remember that this is a content standard, not a display standard. So this is going to tell us what we are to record in a MARC format or in a Dublin Core format. It's telling us what to display, not how to display it. And it's a set of guidelines. It's a more flexible framework to incorporate many different formats to one set of rules. So we don't have different sections for, like, books and sound recordings and video recordings. They're all incorporated into one set of standards. It can be used with many different encoding schemas. That would be like MARC or Dublin Core or MOS. Supports clustering of bibliographic records. So it supports the relationships that happen between records, whether they are the same titles, have the same authors, have the same publishers, have the same dates. Those things are all interconnected. It is compatible with legacy records, which are the old records from AACR2 and previous rules. So it will be compatible with those rules. We don't have to go back and recatalog everything and bring it up to speed with RDA. We would just leave those records as they are, and then the new records we add would be RDA records. And lastly, RDA is not just for libraries, but should be compatible to address the needs of other communities as well. This is seen in archives, museums, online depositories, anything that would need to describe materials that they have. And of course, with a new set of rules comes some new terminology. And these are just this is just a list of some of the main terms that are kind of changing and being updated. From old to new, an area, what we would call an area now, is now an element. The heading would be an authorized access point. Author, composer, those would be creators, and a main entry is also called the creator. The uniform title changed to preferred or collective title. Chief source of information, preferred source of information. Authority control is now access point control. And then a C reference is a variant access point. So some of the terminology is kind of evolving as the rules have come to be. So these are some of the things you're going to be seeing in the new rules. Now, I said we would go through FRBR, which is related to RDA. FRBR is the functional requirement for bibliographic records. Its focus is on user tasks and what users do to find materials or information that they need. FRBR is an entity relationship model, and we'll define those entities and relationships between those entities next. The four user tasks for FRBR, and then there are four user tasks for FRAD as well. And FRAD is the functional requirements for authority data. So those are for our access points. FRBR and FRAD are very closely related. And with FRBR, we're going to find, identify, select, and then obtain. And for FRAD, we want to find, identify, contextualize, and justify. So those are the user tasks that we're looking at. Now, to find something, we just do a search term into the database. To identify it, you come up with a list of hits. Then you select, you look at the ones you want to take a closer look at, and then obtain those things would be looking at the record and finding out where to find those things. So those are kind of the justifications for those user tasks. Now, the FRBR entities are broken up into three main groups. And the first group is the one we're really going to look in depth at. And those are the products of intellectual work. And there are four main levels, so to speak, of those things. They're work, expression, manifestation, and items. And we'll take a closer look at those next. But group two entities are those responsible for the work, and those are persons, corporate bodies. You can also say families in this instance as well. And finally, the group three entities are subjects, concept, event, object, place, and all of group one and two entities. And the attributes of an item. Attributes are kind of like the explanation or some characteristics of the different work, expression, manifestation, and items. Some attributes might be like a barcode number for an item, marks or inscriptions, gift plates, where the item came from. Those are specific things to an item. Attributes of a manifestation would be a publisher, a date of publication, the form of the carrier, is it a sound recording or so forth. Attributes of an expression are the form of the expression, the language, the type of score. Attributes of a work is basically the form of the work, the medium of a performance, the coordinates of a cartographic material. It's basically the first formation of that particular work. Now, when I talk about work, expression, manifestation, and item, they're all related. And this is a diagram of how they're related. And I'll give some examples of those relationships in the next couple of slides, but I wanted you to see this to show you that a work is realized through an expression, embodied in a manifestation, and exemplified by an item. That's how we describe those things. So an example of that might be for Mary Shelley's Dracula. The work, Dracula, would be like the fully formed out idea for that novel in Mary Shelley's head. Okay? Whatever she came up with, the idea of it, the concept of it, the plot line, those kinds of things. The expression would be like the English text that Shelley wrote, the manuscript of it, for example. A manifestation would be the publication of the book. A manifestation could also be the publication of the audiobook. And then finally, the item is the actual copy owned by a library or owned by a person. Another example of how these things break down is the idea for Lost Moon. And that was a book published, it was a screenplay for the movie Apollo 13. That's a manifestation of it because it was based on that book. And an expression would be the DVD version of it. And finally, the item would be the actual DVD that Dickinson Library holds. So those are some examples of those relationships between the work, the manifestation, the expression, and the item. Now, why are fervor and frat important? Now, we know that we can have these relationships and how things relate to one another. They're a way we can talk about the bibliographic universe. They give us an organization about the bibliographic universe. And they give us a common vocabulary and conceptual language that can be recognized internationally. So when we talk about Lost Moon, for example, that's the work, the whole idea of it. And then we can talk about manifestations being the book or the screenplay or other such entities. And then we can talk about an expression. Well, do you have a DVD version? Do you have the VHS version? Do you have the book published by HarperCollins? Those kinds of different expressions. And then finally, the item, the actual physical thing you have in your hand. They can be used as a reference point against which to measure and test cataloging instructions to meet user needs. So we can go ahead and use new things that are emerging, new rules, and bump them up against fervor and frat, and do they help the user find the material. And finally, the separation of the four Group 1 entities allows for a more precise definition of the boundaries between content and carrier. And we'll see these changes with the GMD. The content and the carrier are different in that the content is actually what's in it, and the carrier would be like, is it a VHS? Is it a DVD? So I'll show you those in just a moment. The descriptive cataloging changes that take place are basically in transcribed fields. The motto that's being used is, take what you see, accept what you get. basically we don't correct errors in transcribed fields and we don't abbreviate terms in transcribed fields. And those are your descriptive fields mostly, such as publisher, title even, author. We don't aren't going to correct errors or abbreviate anything. Well, just about anything. I'll show you some examples. What will tell me that a record is an AACR2 record or an RDA record? This is one thing that we're going to talk about in our 3-hour class, and I'll plug that right now, that we're going to have in the fall. And basically there's an indicator in the leader, which is the 000 field, and it'll be an I rather than an A. There are also new tags in MARC to accommodate RDA rules, and some of those are displayed instead of the GMD. The GMD is no longer. So the 245 subfield H will no longer be there when we use RDA. Instead, we will have 3 different MARC tags to describe the content, the media, and the carrier. The content would be, is it a text, notated music, still image, those kinds of things. The media type would be, what media do you need to use to access this information? So do you need an audio player? Do you need a computer? Do you need a video player? Do you need unmediated, which would be nothing, just to open the book, for example. And the carrier type is the actual thing that the information is stored on. Is it a disk? Is it a volume, which would be a book? Is it an online resource? The actual thing that it is. So what would this look like for a book? Well, with AACR2, right now we just have the 300 field that would give us the pages, the illustrations, and the length of the book, the size of it. With RDA, you'll notice the changes that we have. We're going to type out pages, we're going to type out color illustrations, but we're not going to type out length. We don't know why, but it's one of those where it was seen that the international community knows length measurements as abbreviations, so they decided to keep those. And the addition of the 336, 337, and 338 fields are listed there for a book. So you'd have text, unmediated, and volume. The $2 that says RDA content, that's just the vocabulary that you use for describing those different fields in the subfield A. And I have a list of those websites where you would get your vocabulary at the end of this presentation. Now, how would this look for a music CD? Those are things that we had GMDs for, but now they're not going to be there. So in AACR2, we would use Firehouse Super Hits, the GMD sound recording, and then have Firehouse again. And it's just one sound disc. It's digital, and it's 4¾ inches. You'll notice in the 245 that the sound recording GMD is gone. And then in the 300, we've got the inches translated into centimeters. In RDA, all the measurements are done in metric, so we won't have English measurements any longer. And the 336, 337, 338 are given there for you. It's performed music. That's what it is. And you need an audio to access the information, and the actual storage is on an audio disk. So that's how you would describe that. Other changes in descriptive fields that you're going to see is there's no more abbreviating in transcribed fields. So the edition statement that says 5th revised edition spelled out for you, in AACR2 we would go ahead and abbreviate that, but in RDA we would not. So you'd actually type out 5th revised edition. Now, for a publisher, if the title page says Reed Publishing Company 2010, in AACR2, we would go ahead and just abbreviate Reed Pub Comp. But in RDA, we go ahead and type everything out. Same thing with the title page. It says third revised edition. Was it abbreviated? You go ahead and abbreviate. So basically, you're just transcribing whatever it says in the book or in the case or wherever your chief source of information is, your preferred source of information, that's where you would abbreviate and not abbreviate. You just follow what's on the resource. For publisher information, now there's no more using abbreviations for the Latin. We would actually type out place of publication not identified, publisher not identified, and date of publication not identified. We're pretty much going away from using the Latin and using real English instead. So those things are no longer abbreviated. A lot of the reasoning for the not abbreviating anymore is that we don't need to learn those abbreviations, first of all. And number two, we used to be sized down to 3.5 by 5 cards. We had to use those for our card catalogs. And now, since we're an online resource, we don't need to do all those abbreviations anymore. And this way, too, we'll be able to collate a lot more information together, and we won't have to worry about abbreviating different types of things. So if you're searching for a particular publisher and it's all typed out for you and the user wants to have it all typed out, they'll be able to bring up those things without it not giving a hit because of abbreviations. The next big change is we no longer have the rule of three. So we transcribe as is found on the resource. The rule of three was if you had more than three authors, you could just list the first one and put et al. And not have to worry about listing the rest. Well, that's no longer. There's no limit on the number of people or corporate bodies that can be recorded, but there is an option just to transcribe the first name and give a bracketed summary of the rest. So if you have a resource that has, you know, 20 different authors, it's your choice whether or not you want to list them all or not. The other nice thing in the 245 field, subfield C, you can go ahead and transcribe the first and give a bracketed summary of the rest, but you can list every single person in your additional entries down at the 700 field without having to have them in the 245. So those are some options that are given to you in RDA. This is an example of the rule of three. In AACR 2, we would just list the first one in et al. In RDA, we will have a 100 field for just about everything, and you take the first author for the main entry. Then you can list the rest of them. And I didn't put it here, but then you could have a 700 field for each of the other authors. And the RDA option is listed there as well for describing the rest of the authors. You could just written and compiled by Patrick Sebrick and four others in brackets instead of listing all of them in the 245. But you could still list all of them as 700 fields in the access points. So that's kind of nice too. Right now, we are using the ISBD punctuation, which is basically the, you know, the colon and the semicolons and the commas and where they are right now. But RDA does not require ISBD punctuation. So we might see records that don't have punctuation in them anymore, which will look kind of funny to us in the beginning, but it doesn't require it, but for the time being, we are using it. Because it gives us some information, you know, if you have a colon there instead of a semicolon, you can expect different things afterwards. So we are continuing to use those for the time being. And lastly, we're going to look at access points in RDA. Right now, for the subject headings, we're still using LCSH, which is the Library of Congress subject headings. Nothing has changed there. All those subject headings will be the same as what they are now. We follow the changes that happen in LCSH as they come along, and there are updates that happen, but because of our, you know, there's no changes because of RDA. The changes for access points are in the records for people, events, uniform titles, and those things are basically added to the authority records, and you might see them in the access points themselves to differentiate them from other things. Those characteristics could be dates, could be language, could be place, it could be director for films. It can be a lot of different things. And I'll show you a couple of examples here. Uniform titles in for the Bible have changed. They're dropping the OT and NT from them, so you'll just have Bible in the book that it's from. And fictitious characters now can be authors. So if Miss Piggy wrote a book, you can actually have her be an author. And Geronimo Stilton is now legally a main entry, even though we've been having him as the main entry for a while. And lastly, for events, in AACR2, you might have seen like Expo 86 and then the place, but now we would see Expo and then the date and the place in parentheses rather than the other way around. So those are just some basic changes that are going to be happening. And we're going to start seeing those as we import records. Lastly, I have some websites listed for you guys, and you will be getting the slideshow presentation in an email sent to you, so you can access these different sites. The RDA toolkit is listed there, and we have asked for anyone who is interested in getting the RDA toolkit to contact Sean. And there is a cost involved with that, with getting the online version and the print version. The print version is, I believe, $150, but it is not going to be updated as often as the electronic version. And the electronic version, I believe, is $195, and we get a 10% discount, 5% discount, excuse me, right now. So, those are some things to consider. There are some historic and working documents that are from the Joint Steering Committee of RDA. And then Ferber, if you want to actually read the publication that is Ferber, you can read that. And then I listed the content, media, and carrier types there too. So you can look at what the vocabulary is going to be and what are the different things you can use to describe something, which should be very helpful for you. That concludes my presentation, and I think we're ready to open it to any questions that anyone would have, and I will unmute you.
The conference has been unmuted.
So go ahead and let me know if you have any questions. Anybody?
Well, I was wondering, when you search for dates, will the parentheses be needed?
The dates for the access point?
It was something you just showed a couple screens ago on the Expo 1986. I mean, would parentheses be needed to look for information like that on events?
No. When you would type in Expo, it would be one of the search hits that would come up, and then you would go ahead and select the one that you would like. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm kind of new to me. Sure.
Yeah, it's separating out the date from the actual event so that you can have a list of events and then the dates would follow suit.
Oh.
Instead of having different abbreviations depending on what the event is, you know, and they can all be jumbled up. Because sometimes the expos, they can be called Expo 1996 and then Expo 97, and, you know, they can be called different things. This gives us a uniform way to describe it.
Sure.
And so you'd have a list that would be a lot more readable to your users.
Okay, I agree. Thank you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is Denise in Wakefield. I have a question.
Sure.
We don't do any original cataloging, but we're copy catalogers. What would be the primary thing that we should look for or learn about this new cataloging?
Well, I guess the main thing I want you to be aware of what's happening and know that changes are coming and that you're going to start seeing these different fields come in and these different access points coming in, and that it's okay, and not to delete those things, because those are going to be very important when we start looking at different sets of information. And you can kind of tell the difference between AECR2 and RDA because of the different things that are changing. Like, we're spelling out different things now that we've never had to spell out before, like pages and color illustrations, you know, and not to go back and do more work for yourself, but to just be aware that these things are changing, and to know that when you see a record that is very different, that it's okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Hi, this is Barb from St. Agnes again. I guess I'm just curious. This looks really helpful and all that. It looks like the records are going to be a lot bigger for all the items, so that's going to take longer to download and use the software and things like that. Is that the result, I suppose, the one bad thing about it?
Well, I don't think it'll take any more to download. It will take more for us to actually describe something originally, but I don't think it will take any more to download than it has in the past. It's just a different way of looking at things and a different way to describe things.
And maybe searching would be more quicker too, though, to find what you want. Go ahead.
I think RDA is all about, you know, how Amy was saying, you know, it's all about finding and, you know, how to get create these access points for the user. And so, you know, I think the hope is that people will have a lot more success in the catalog to quickly locate what they want. And also, I think, you know, if you guys come to the three-hour class, which you should, you know, she'll talk more about some of the changes with the authorities and how there's a lot more information, I think, that you can put into the author information, the author authority, so that there are ways you can find relationships better between the creators of different works and the relationship between them as well.
Mm-hmm. You'll be able to, you know, there will be more information in there as far as translators and editors and composers. Those things will actually be spelled out in the authority records. So you, and in the authority that you would see as part of like a 100 field, it might have composer at the end of it. So you know that that person was the composer, not the performer, and vice versa. So, you know, that's going to be helpful for us, because then you don't have to try and distinguish between those two. It'll be really spelled out for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the other things that having everything all spelled out and getting rid of the abbreviations that I heard mentioned was that it's going to make things easier to parse. So, like, if our system is trying to push information out to another system or out to the internet, it'll be more easy for like a search engine or something to parse up the different parts of the record and make it easier for people to search without having to go physically like onto our catalog and use our search engine. And another step that we're taking towards that is that our MARC records can be output in like XML format, which is, you know, more of a standardized thing. So hopefully the changes, you know, aren't so huge that they're going to overwhelm us, but yet they'll take us in a direction that's just keeping us current with things and enabling us to share information more readily.
Mm-hmm.
This is Denise Wakefield again.
Okay.
So if we take the three-hour class and we learn a little bit about adding, say, like more authors to a record where before it said and others or whatever, we would be able to go back and maybe fix up some of our older records to make them better. I don't know if I'm saying this correctly or...
Yeah. I mean, we could update old records to RDA format, but that's something that we don't have to do.
Yeah.
It's something that we could do to enhance records that we have, especially with compilations and anthologies and things like that. It gives a lot more leeway for listing authors and access points. So, you know, you can find that short story that's inside of a big anthology more easily than you would have in the past.
Right, because I know we'd say, oh, we know we have that, but then sometimes it's difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
So those records maybe we would be looking at to maybe improve a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think as you find things and even, you know, if you maybe bring in a record, I mean, I know we're trying to copy catalog. We're not trying to, like, invent the wheel or redo anything, but if you're bringing in a record and you notice it's missing something, that is a really important access point that's going to help people find it, you know, certainly having a little bit, enough information that you can add that in there and make it a better experience for everybody when they're searching would be great, you know?
Yeah. It's a standard that really emphasizes content notes and added authors and relationships between what's inside of an anthology and what can be accessed through different kinds of searches. So it's really trying to extrapolate as much information from that object as possible and create that metadata so that people can find it.
Hi, this is Patty Calumet. I have a question. Are there only fields that we'll be adding or 300 fields will just be changing the language in the other ones?
Right now, in the MARC format for bibliographic, those are the ones that will be added. The rest we already have and already use, but those were the three that will be added to MARC bibliographic records.
Okay.
There are more records that are authority records that we really don't deal with too much, but you can add more information to authority records to help distinguish it. One author from another or one event from another that you can add, like I showed you in the slide, it was 2 slides ago, I believe, some of the added information for events, for example. Those things are also added into the authority record.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Amy and I are going to be going to the annual CIRCE conference next month. And we're really interested in seeing how they are going to incorporate, like with the loss of the GMD that we usually see in the title, that's kind of nice when we're searching and it says sound recording, electronic resource, or whatever. That's going to be gone in the new records, but now we've got these three 300 tags. And those are repeatable, too. So, like, you know, you could have... a book that has an audio with it, and then you could have, you know, additional 300 tags. So we're interested in seeing how CIRCE is going to handle in the online catalog how we can really help our users, you know, realize what they're looking at quickly without that GMD in there anymore.
Yep.
if nobody has any other questions right now, we'll just thank you all for coming, and I will send you the slides from today's presentation. And then in a little, you know, maybe next month sometime, we'll have a better idea of when the class will be held in the fall. Actually, it might not be for a couple of months, because part of that will depend on when we gain access to the RDA toolkit. We'll want to make sure that we have the capability for everybody to use that. And we also don't want to give you the class too soon before the standard is approved and will be implemented. But if you can just kind of keep a lookout for the announcement about the class, the hands-on class, and we hope you can make it.
Oh, and I just wanted to mention, too, the, those of you who use Dewey Decimal System, DDC 23 is coming out this summer, and they're already doing pre-orders, and you get a 10% discount if you pre-order your set. So it's regularly $400, so you always get $40 off if that's something that interests you. I just wanted to put a plug in for that, and you can go to OCLC's website to find out more. Anyway, I want to thank you guys for coming today and for your great questions, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon and weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thank you. Please stand by.